And then we'll maybe drill down into the details of why it all matters.
Well, yes, we're very excited about a new library location in the Uptown neighborhood. It's going to be on the first floor of the Uptown Lofts, which is a housing and commercial development on 22nd Avenue, between 61st Street and 63rd Street. We're going to have about 7,700 square feet, which is a significant amount of room, and we're dedicating it to children. So we'll only serve children and their families from birth through fifth grade. We're hoping that we can be open in early 2024, at least the first half of 2024. But you know how things are going with supply chains right now. So no promises, but that's kind of where we want to land.
Well, that's terrific, and that's a really central location in the city. I wonder if you would talk about the significance of this being in the Uptown neighborhood, Director Bratton.
We weren't looking to add any library locations. We already have four, which is a lot for a town of 100,000. And they're all located in neighborhoods. And we also have a small branch already in Uptown. But when we moved out of the Civic Center building, we had to make way for that new City Hall that's about to be built. You can see that Civic Center's coming down right now.
Yes, that's where the administration was, wasn't it?
That's right. So we had administration, we had what we call technical services, which is how all the books come in and all the library materials come in and get processed and go out to the branches. So that's a lot of logistics right there. And we also had our technical guys there, the network guys, and we had maintenance headquartered there. So it was a very large building and we had a lot of room to work out of that building. I called it the administrative building. But then when the city planned to use that lot for a new city hall, it was important that we left. And we didn't know exactly when that was going to happen, but the air conditioning went out in that building in the summer of 2020. And so that seemed like a great time to get out. We couldn't find any other space that didn't cost too much to rent. And so we sort of squeezed into the Southwest Library. And it's been really tight, but we've managed to make that happen. And so the mayor knew that we were squeezed. And when some plans came about to build some new spaces in the Uptown neighborhood, he suggested that we could find some room for some library offices. And he started talking about the Uptown Lofts building. But we looked at that and said, there's no way we're going to put library offices in there. That is the perfect place for something really impactful, something to service that neighborhood, and specifically in the children, all children of Kenosha, obviously, but specifically locate it where there is a great need. So as we have all know, and there's no secret there, or the children in Kenosha really have experienced a lot of instability. First, it was the pandemic, which lasted, and some say it's still not over. And then the trauma of those burning buildings right there in their neighborhood, a civil unrest that happened in August of 2020. So, being separated from school also, really created some serious problems with kids' social and emotional development, as well as their ability to do well in school. And so, that in particular is a neighborhood where we see not only children like every other neighborhood, but they have a higher rate of Hispanic children and Black children. And if you look at the test scores for our third graders in KUSD, after the pandemic, we only have 27% of our third graders reading at a third grade level. If you look at the scores for Hispanic children, it falls to 13%. And if you look at the scores for Black male children, we're looking at a 4%. So, we're really in a critical situation. And with that neighborhood having so many of those children that fall into those categories, right there, it just felt like this is what we need to do. Let's get in there and let's do some post-pandemic recovery work. It's a crisis we cannot ignore. These low levels of literacy are related to unemployment in the future, crime, prison populations. There are links, and they're really, really serious.
It's not just a slogan, is it? Reading is fundamental.
Reading is fundamental. And if people think that books are gone, well, you still read. I mean, our reading programs in the summer have been called Everybody Reads for a reason, because, you know, when you're reading your screen, when you're reading signs, when you're reading directions for your new electronic device, you have to read. And if you can't, you're in a very unsafe, precarious position. I think, you know, knowledge is never wasted, and it's absolutely critical for your personal safety to be able to read and understand. And, you know, that's another day you and I can talk about that.
Well, this then is a really very, very special initiative that is sort of born out of the present need. We always need to be focusing on our children and their learning, and their learning in all kinds of ways. And I don't know, you might not see it this way, but I personally would say this is really a matter of social justice and equity as well. And it makes me very, very proud as a former trustee of the library and a former member of your Library Foundation board to know that you've gone in this direction. Now, this is a very accessible location, isn't it? Uptown is well served by bus routes, as I recall. I used to walk to Uptown from my location as a child in the Sunnyside neighborhood after we left the old Bain School neighborhood by the Italian American Association. And you're served by at least, two bus lines there?
That's right.
So what about the accessibility in terms of handicapped access?
Well, in a new building, all those features will be in place. There is an interior elevator that goes up and down to the apartments above the library, and then we'll be designing the library itself as very accessible.
So it'll be at street level?
It is on street level, yes.
And you'll have windows and lots of light, I presume?
Well, that'd be nice.
And maybe those windows will invite people to come in. Yeah. Well, this is really exciting, and I want to delve more deeply into this, Director Bratton, in just a few minutes. But first, I wonder if we could just take a turn and just talk about your library system. You know, until I was a trustee of the library system and appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the Common Council, I really had no idea where the money came from and how it all fits together and who's in charge and how it's managed, I'm afraid to say. And I'll bet there aren't more than a handful of listeners right now who could describe exactly how the library is funded and managed. Could you fill us in on that mystery?
Most people don't realize that we are a city department. So we call ourselves a city library. And in the county, there is more than one library. So it's important not to use the word system. I know that that is common. This is the fourth state I worked at. And across the country, if you say system, that means a confederation of a lot of library locations, right? So it's natural to say that Kenosha Public Library System, because we have four branches. But in Wisconsin, a system is something completely different. It is a state statute defined organization that is funded by the county and by the state. And it's meant to support the services in all the public libraries so that there is an even playing field. In other words, the system pays for the internet access, and the system pays for the electronic books and the electronic databases that you use for homework help or for research, so that no matter the size of the library or the local funding for the library, we all have a base number of services and quality services. And so that is the system. And so my role is two different roles. And this comes from way back in 1981, when library systems were created for the state. The largest library in each system became the resource library, and the resource library did the administration for the system. Now, you have to realize in 1981, there wasn't any internet. There weren't all those internet lines and things like that. It was pretty basic. It was things like advice about, you know, legal advice or building advice, you know, if you want to build a new library, those kinds of things. It was delivery of materials, you know, back and forth between libraries when people are borrowing interlibrary loan. It was those kinds of services that, you know, became much more later in the years when in the 1990s, when the World Wide Web came around. So Kenosha Public Library, as the largest library in Kenosha County, took on the administrative role. And it just did that as part of its normal operating. That is a legacy to today. And that is why I have two job descriptions. I have I run the Kenosha Public Library, and I also run the Kenosha County Library System, director of both of those. That's unusual. In fact, it's there's only one other county that does that. So otherwise, they have the systems have become so big with so many libraries, and especially in some of the northern counties, that they're just become multi-county systems, and they have their own administration and things like that. So I'm always a little, my ears kind of perk when people say the library system, and I'm thinking, I wonder what they're talking about, because again, we have a county library system that's completely separate from the two public libraries in this county. One is a public library that serves the city of Kenosha, that's Kenosha Public Library, and the community library, which is called a joint library. And that is four different municipalities who have agreed to pool their money and create a library for the western part of the county. Everybody else who's not in one of those agreements, any of those other municipalities, still get library service. And that's part of that whole Wisconsin idea, that whole thing where every citizen in Wisconsin should have really good access to education. And so that's why the systems became what they are. And the idea is that anyone from Pleasant Prairie or Bristol or Summers, they can walk in and use any library that they want to, whether it's community library or Kenosha Public Library. And then we keep track of that. Luckily, it's all automated and it's easy to do. And then we are reimbursed for the service that we give to people who don't pay us directly. So Kenosha Public Library, if we're building a new library, that's a local decision. That's a library board of 9 people who are appointed by the mayor. So that's how that works. For community library, they have a set group of, it's a distribution among those 4 different municipalities based on population, how many people from each of those municipalities are on their board. And then the Kenosha County Library System has a 7-member board that is appointed by the county executive. So
all right.
That is that complicated enough.
Well, I think it's important to understand. And for those who are just tuning in on the half hour, this is Community Matters with Lenny Quinta, and I'm interviewing Barbara Bratton this morning, the director of the Kenosha Public Library, and as we've just learned and now understand, the director of the Kenosha County Library System. Now, Barbara, where does the money come from? How does the money work? Local, state, federal, municipal, private? I suppose you get money from every kind of source you can to give the best service to the citizenry of Kenosha County.
We do. And our budget is $7 million this year. And $4.5 million of that comes from the city, comes from a local tax. So we have quite a bit of money to raise for a $7 million dollar budget. It does not all come from the city. So again, $7 million total, and 4.5 million comes from the city local taxes. Then we are also compensated for our service to those municipalities that don't pay us. So Pleasant Prairie is the largest one, of course, and we are also compensated across borders. So, you know, as we all know, and it's very popular, if you live in Racine, you can use this library. And if you live in Kenosha, you can use the Racine libraries. So that back and forth is also compensated. And then we also receive money through the system to pay for our electronic products and our internet. So that all adds up to almost 2 million. And then the other money, the leftover money, comes from all kinds of different sources. Federal grants have been very common post-pandemic or even during the pandemic. We've done some incredible projects with ARPA money, that American Relief Plan Act money. We put vending machines in the Boys and Girls Club with children's books in them. We've improved our internal meeting rooms so that people can do telehealth, and they can, we're all set for remote classrooms should we have another situation where we need to accommodate that. So we've done some upgrades over the years from federal grants. We also get grants from NASA, from the National Library of Medicine, for programmatic things. And right now we have a huge project, a two-year project, happening through a private foundation called FINRA, which I can't recite exactly what FINRA stands for, but it is financial institutions that pool their money so that the money goes for financial education. And so that's a $50,000 grant over a two-year period, where you'll see when you're looking at our program calendar, a lot of financial education programs, including a personal financial coach, is available through the library.
So, now, you also get money from locally from your friends group, right?
We do.
Tell us about the Friends of the Library and the Kenosha Public Library Foundation, how that works.
Right. The Friends receive gifts, but mostly their income comes from book sales, as most people in this city have attended a book sale. They're quite popular. And through memberships to the Friends. And it's no small amount. They typically provide a wish list, grant a wish list of about $25,000 a year. So that's quite a support. These are these extra things that we have difficulty working into the operating budget. And so they're more than willing to help us with our wishes. The foundation is a group that looks for larger gifts, and they are the group that will go out and fundraise for this new library for us. To be clear about the funding for the new library, it is 100% of $1.5 million that's gone through the city as ARPA money. I talked about that before, the American Rescue Plan Act. That's federal money for recovery. So $1.5 million will buy that space for us in that building, and also provide money to upgrade the space and to finish off the space inside. We are launching a capital campaign in the next couple months that will supplement that money so that we can do a really fine job on the inside and even develop an endowment fund for that space so that we can continue to offer some exceptional services there.
You have an idea yet of what the size of that fundraising goal is going to be? I know you're still putting together plans, I'm quite sure.
We are putting together plans, but we feel like a $1 million goal is the right goal. So that's what we'll be pursuing.
And that would include a few dollars for a permanent endowment?
Yes.
Well, that's terrific. I'm sure we'll learn a lot more about that in the immediate future. And I have a suspicion that you might be calling me to help. I have a feeling it'd be hard for me to say no. But we'll worry about that at another time. Now let's get back to the children's library space itself. You have this grant through the city for a recovery from the recession, the pandemic. That's going to pretty much give you the space. We have walls, ceiling, windows, but you need to fill up that all those square feet. Is that, do I have the image correct in my head here?
You do.
All right. So what? I'm not an expert in libraries, and I'm not an expert on K through five or birth through five year fifth grade kids at all. So I need to be told, and I'll bet some of our listeners would need to be brought up to date too. How does this all going to correlate with what the students are doing in their schools, just as a start? And then I want to go into further. What do you put in this space to accomplish that goal? But let's start by saying, how is this going to interface with what the schools, the K through five schools do?
Well, we are very interested in what they do at K-Tech. And so a number of us have gone over and taken an intense tour and talked with the K-Tech staff about how they're doing things. And so K-Tech is kind of unique in that they do a lot of hands-on problem solving at every level, and what I mean by that, in every subject. So they don't reserve scientific skills for just the science classes, you know. And even the library has a new problem to solve every day when you walk in. And then groups of kids just tackle those problems, and they do so with such enthusiasm. You know, our kids now are so used to video and audio and tactile learning and experiential learning that, you know, that it would be a mistake not to incorporate that into the new library. So we're looking at that. We're working with Carthage College, Jackie Easley. We're working with a former professor at Parkside, Dana Ryan, who both of these ladies I met through Building Our Future, and they impressed me as people who really know what they're talking about when it comes to early childhood education. And they're advising us about just exactly what language to use and how to incorporate all those early learning skills into a space. And we're also targeting architects. We haven't chosen one yet, but we're thinking outside the box in terms of, let's not just choose an architect that's done libraries before, but let's talk to architects who are building new schools. And the reason why is because new schools are really built around these collaborative spaces where kids are coming together and learning in an experiential kind of way. That is very attractive to children. You and I, Lynn, I will freely admit, and I'm sure you will too, is that we take great pleasure in a quiet library full of books. But to lure those new ones in, those new kids in, you know, we want to provide something exciting for them, and then also have those quiet spaces. So that'll be that combination of those different kinds of spaces in this new space.
This is fascinating to me. So you're being really intentional about gathering information from real experts in early childhood education as to how to involve them in active learning, as well as just sitting in a corner and reading a book or reading a download on a screen. Because this is, after all, we're getting toward the end of the third decade of the 21st century here, and designing a library like we built them in the 1950s just isn't going to work anymore, is it? So this is such a specialized sort of thing. Director Bratton, what kind of questions are you going to be asking these architectural designers for this space? And are there any specific things that or models that you're looking of? Because this is going to be very different from our typical library. I wonder if this is going to, in part, look a little bit more like some of the redesign work you've done in some of the other library spaces in the city? Or is this going to take it to another whole different level?
Well, I could talk about this all day, but we did hire, with some money from the Wisconsin Humanities Council during the pandemic, someone who's an expert in marketing, of all things, His name is David Vinjamuri. He's pretty famous. He's on television quite a bit. He's out in New York. And he just took a very high interest in libraries a number of years ago, because he just loves libraries. And it was frustrating to him that we weren't marketing our collections the way that a retail store would, and that our circulation was declining as a result because of how people shop. And we weren't, you know, we were just doing things traditionally. So we invited him in to take a look at our spaces at Northside and Simmons, or I'm sorry, Southwest, and said, you know, what are we looking at now? Because post-pandemic, people are going to use our spaces differently. We admit it. And he said, yes, they are, and gave us the plan. And our circ has gone up. It's fantastic. He applied principles of retail marketing to libraries, and he predicted that people post-pandemic were going to use our program rooms, and they do. I mean, that is just skyrocketed. People want to be together again. They're going to come back to programs in high numbers, and we are exceeding our program attendance from 2019, which is, you know, the year we're using as pre-pandemic. People are coming back, especially children's programs are just flooded. We had 96 families come to Pokemon on Friday night. It was like, wow. So, you know, we got ahead of the game. People want to work remotely, or are forced to work remotely. They're not going back to the office, and they don't want to work at home all the time. They want a quiet space away from the kids and the dogs and all that, or whatever is distracting them at home, or they just want to separate workspace from home space. I understand that. So they're using the library that way. We have two people on a daily basis that you can identify as working remotely right in the middle of the library. They are here all day long. That's just how people are using us post-pandemic. So how do we modify our spaces and be ready for that so that we're relevant to them? And that's what we've been doing there. Those same kind of ideas will be incorporated with the children's area. How do people interact with the library? What do they need now? It is for children, but it's also for their families. So we're going to do wraparound family services through CAFASI. We're going to do preschool groups with called their Sprouts group with Achievement Center. We've got the YMCA lined up to do an Achievers program after school, which is that homework help and leadership development kind of programming for the kids right there in that library. All these partnerships that we develop with the Summer Parks program, our involvement with that, and we're taking advantage of, because, you know, we don't have to be the experts in everything. The great thing about a library is that we're really good at finding the answer. In other words, like, who does that and who can bring that to the library so that we don't have to know everything or have the staff to do everything. We can just host them.
It's very exciting to me, and I think we're darn lucky to have you here, Barb Bratton, my guest this morning on Community Matters. We're really darn lucky to have you here because you are so forward-looking and willing to break the mold and look in new directions to make sure that the libraries are reflecting the needs of adults and children today, and looking forward into this century. I'm so excited to hear that, and amazing progress that you've made in the time I've been back in Kenosha over the last 23 years. Now, can you talk a little bit more about children's exploring and learning activities? What are we talking about here? Are we talking about books, toys, maker activities, science activities, arts, singing? What do you buy to put into a space like this for the children to work with?
Well,
what is that $1 million minus whatever is going to be set aside for the endowment going to buy to put in this this wonderful, accessible space dedicated to getting our children out of their learning deficit from the pandemic?
Well, the big idea so far has been that we would purchase traveling exhibits from either Betty Brin Children's Museum or the DuPage Children's Museum. They both offer that. The price is pretty high, so I'm not quite sure we will do that. What I don't want to do is have a stagnant space, because no matter how charming it is on day one, it gets old. And so, that traveling exhibit is the better way to go. But again, you know, I mean, we're looking at $300,000 a year to do that, and I'm not sure that's sustainable.
But having the partnerships with places like Betty Brin in Milwaukee and the DuPage organization, that really makes a lot of sense, looking for those kinds of ideas. I think that's a very smart thing to be looking at. And who knows, you may find a donor or a corporate sponsor who might be really interested in aligning with that. What else, Barbara?
Don Kress reached out to me. He's pretty excited about this project too. And he said he was just in Sioux City, South Dakota to visit family. And of all things, the library system there has a children's library, one library dedicated to children. I thought this was a brand new idea. I had no idea. I mean, this was awesome. And then he told me that they have a toy lending library. And I thought that was amazing. If we, you know, we have these developmental kits already. So a three-year-old who you want to try to get them to understand, you know, recognize letters. We have a whole kit for that. It has, you know, manipulatives in it. It has books. It has, you know, all the things that you'd want. But this toy lending library, such an interesting takeoff on that, is that, you know, families that are struggling don't have money for endless toys, right? And they may have, you know, not understand and who does? I mean, you know, none of us are really childhood specialists. I'm not anyway, but I would be very interested in checking out like a toy with some information on, you know, in the package that tells me why this is an important toy, or, you know, what effect does this toy have on your child's learning development at a certain age? I think that would be so interesting to do. As long as you always have to worry about the cleaning part of it, but you know, there's different ways to keep things clean. That was one of our big challenges during the pandemic, was like keeping the toys clean. At one point, we had to just take them off the floor so that they weren't around. But art and theater, music, all of those things are so important, and I want to make sure that we inspire every child, because every child has different innate talents, right? And so the emphasis on STEM, even though I was a science major, it kind of worries me, because I don't want to program children into becoming something they weren't meant to become. All I want to do is inspire their creativity and help them build the confidence to pursue what interests them. And that's the beauty of the library versus the school. Because it's not prescribed, you know, come in. They'll look at all these ideas, look at all the imagination around you. What do you want to know? What do you want to learn? What do you want to read? It's also specific to you. And we don't talk about this enough, is that is the modern children are going to have to learn their whole lives, just like you and I did. You will have to redefine yourself. Your business will go out of business. You know, if you start out in oil and gas, it's not going to be around forever. You're going to have to retool yourself. And you can either stand back and wait for somebody to train you, or you can go out and learn what you want to learn, right? And so if you have a good relationship with learning, then you're going to be a successful person all your life, because it won't, you'll be happy to learn. You'll want to know. You'll be curious.
And so I love the way you put that. Developing our children so that they have a healthy and wonderful relationship with the concept and the ways of learning and acquiring information and joy from learning new things and being able to actualize their hidden latent talents and skills. And I share your concern as a science freak in high school. I share your concern with STEM versus STEAM, science, technology, arts, and music. I like the idea of getting the arts in there too, because I think that is part of a well-rounded person. And the library is a wonderful place to explore. I'm really excited by that idea, Director Bratton. Now, this all sounds wonderful, but you can't just throw a bunch of people into this space without staff, guides, people who can help the children and help families manipulate these spaces, manipulate these great opportunities they have. So one of the things I've been thinking about is, wow, what kind of a challenge is it to get the right staff or to train some of your existing staff to be able to optimize this whole effort? I wonder if you'd share a little bit about that with us. I'm really puzzled by how one would even go about attacking that question.
So, you know, there's been a real emphasis on diversity in the past couple of years, rightly so. And we knew that we had a problem at the library in that there was a history that was embedded in some of our neighborhoods where we even overheard at least one or two people remark that the Uptown Library was a white person's library. And so that was extremely troubling. We wondered why there was such low use of that library. And then it became pretty obvious that you could go there if you had to. You know, certainly we offer things like printing and faxing and access to a computer that you can't get anywhere else. But it was really, really troubling that the neighborhood didn't feel like they were welcome there. And it was our impetus to take a look at our staff, and most of them look like me. I mean, I'm, you know, an older white woman, and they're wonderful at their jobs, but they weren't welcoming just because they look like an authoritative figure and they symbolized a white person's library. So what we've done is hire a lot of diverse young people. And it has been remarkable in the last few months, actually, how we have seen an increase in the number of people from diverse backgrounds coming to all of our branches, which is terrific. On any particular day, you will hear conversations in Spanish because about 20 out of my 85 staff are fluent Spanish speakers. And they wear little badges that say habla español. So that welcoming, just vision, right? I mean, children, little children of color are like, you know, latching on to our librarians of color. You can see it, you know, physically, and they'll just kind of walk around, they'll become friends. And, you know, we keep track of, we share our stories among each other about our you know, how things went from day to day. And I read a lot of stories about kids who just love their librarian. That is a personal relationship that keeps kids coming back and allows us to really help them individually develop, you know, their reading and their interests. That personal relationship, it's just irreplaceable. And when I have a young male Black librarian who is available to work with a third grade male Black boy, it's priceless. I mean, there is a connection there where that child looks at that librarian and says, hey, the library's for me. You know, we don't have to have a slogan on the wall, your library's for everyone. He sees that when he comes to the library, and that the library profession could be for him.
That's so, a good point. You're really working on making the place welcoming in every way. Representation is vital. I think that people are beginning to recognize that, and that we should have recognized it better for a long time. Are there any other credentials that are especially interesting for your library staff? Are you going to have to bring in any early learning experts or bring in some trainers for your staff to help students work in this space? And I might point out that by diversifying your staff, you're also performing a function in terms of workforce development for our community and providing opportunities for persons of color. And that is also a wonderful piece of what you're doing. It shows what a holistic vision I think our library has developed. Any other skill sets that you're going to have to either bring in terms of personnel or training that are coming to mind at this point as you plan?
We have two levels of staff in the children's department, which we call youth and family services, by the way, because, excuse me, it's a nod to the fact that parents are first teachers.
Yep.
We have children's librarians, and we also have early literacy specialists, and we don't just grab anybody and call them that. They have to go through a certification kind of process. There's a curriculum that they have to go through. And to the extent that we actually our staff have certification to teach daycare staff and preschool teachers. So it's pretty intense.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. Well, I wonder if we could close by just reminding people how to get a library card and how often you have to renew them.
That's a great question. We do have to renew your card every 2 years, and there's a good reason for that. First of all, how do you get a library card? If you live in the city of Kenosha, come into any of our branches, and we'll get you a library card. Excuse me. If you live somewhere like Racine, or if you live in an unincorporated area, like what I mean by that is like library somewhere in Kenosha County, where you don't pay directly to a library, like if you're in Pleasant Prairie or you're in Summers or Bristol, you can just walk in and get a library card as well.
Great. That sounds pretty easy. And finally, I wonder if you would let us know how people can volunteer to help the library and where they can call or get online to help, Director Breton.
We have a volunteer program. It's mostly for teenagers at this point. They have an opportunity to work off their findings by volunteering at the library. And we do have projects. And so when we have projects, we look for volunteers. Generally, we don't have people who are always volunteering, and that's just a result of the pandemic. We just haven't reinstalled that regular volunteer program. But if you want to support the library, we have a Friends of the Library bookshop in the Southwest branch that always needs people to run the store. So if you ever had that childhood dream of playing store, here's your opportunity to come and man the bookstore for the Friends of the Library. Join the Friends of the Library, join the foundation, and certainly you'd like to have a memorial for anyone in particular, or you'd like to honor anyone, we take donations and we put a book plate in a book.
Great. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time this morning to be with us. My guest has been Barbara Breton, Director of the Kenosha Public Library and the County Library System. For Community Matters, this is Lena Aquinta urging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You are listening to WGTD FM 91.1. This is Community Matters. I'm Jenny Tunkies. And today my first guest is Tamara Coleman. She is the 2023 Humanitarian Award recipient. That award was given on Monday at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at Gateway Technical College. Tamara, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I'm honored to be here.
And thank you for being here. I am just so thrilled to talk to you. So people were able in all three counties to nominate recipients for the 2023 Humanitarian Award. And the person who nominated you, if anyone who's ever met you or even seen you in passing, I think this is a really good description. They called you a powerhouse. Kenosha County, and that's 100% true, and described you as a servant, which is 100% true. You always serve your community. You keep that in the forefront, and the quote that this person shared was that that this really moved her. And this moves me as well, that you said to this person, the people we work for are in need. They are not needy. And I think what's key about that statement is work for, and that they are in need. So yes.